Greetings, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the podcast. And for those of you who are worshiping today, happy Easter as well as happy spring. It's perfect that I'm introducing you to Gwyneth Flack today because, as you'll hear in our conversation, we had a long and delightfully sweet discussion around the maple sugaring that is happening in her neck of the woods. Now, when I was a kid, I'd read books, older books, of course, that talked about how important maple sugaring was in the northeastern part of the country and how often children would enjoy their maple sugar by spreading it on the snow, waiting for it to solidify, and then eating it like a little treat. My kid heart so wanted to experience that one day, and it's still there. It's still on my bucket list. But imagine my surprise when I start talking to Gwyneth and she lets me know that the maple syrup is rising and that it's flowing where she lives. And so I got to fulfill a childhood dream through this conversation, getting a little more information about the maple sugaring process and where that delicious confection comes from. Now, Gwyneth has had a bit of an unusual life. She was very, very intuitive as a child, as you'll hear in this conversation, and both her parents were scientists. And instead of them saying, "No, no, we think you're making it up," they supported her and her way of viewing the world. I'm going to let Gwyneth introduce herself to you, and I think that when you hear what she has to say, once again, just like the interview with David Richards, you'll understand that there is far more going on in our idea of what normal reality looks like than we can ever imagine. So now, here's my interview with Gwyneth Flack.
So I remember walking around going, gosh, is this all there is to this life? Is the cosmic joke on me? And don't people see who I am? I see who they are. And so I was asking sort of consciously and unconsciously this question that I was kind of putting out to the universe. And I actually got an answer to that same year, because I was walking in the garden and I stepped on a bee. The bee stung me and I went into anaphylactic shock. So I would describe myself in a lot of different ways. I'm an author, and I've always loved writing. Literally since I was a little kid, I've always loved writing. I am a teacher, and I love teaching. And you might say that I've been teaching since I was little too, because I think that there are so many teachers out there that don't even know that they're teachers. But in my case, I do teach classes for people, and I teach intuitive development and healing and meditation-based intuitive development classes. I'm a very creative person, and I love all forms of creativity and exploring ourselves as, I mean, we are creative beings. So I am a spiritual being having a human experience, or an infinite being having a human experience. And the way I experience it is that we're here to grow. We're here for our soul's evolution. And how do we navigate our growth? That's the journey. How we learn on the journey as these infinite beings having this human experience, because it's not easy to have this human body, because it always seems like we're separate, but we're not really. We're so connected to each other, but it seems like we're alone or we're separate so often when we have this human experience. And so I think it's really interesting to be of spirit, but also be of the body. And speaking of that experience, I often feel like I'm a like an amateur anthropologist. I love people, and I love studying people, and I love looking at cultures too. In part, maybe because I moved to America when I was six. But anyway, yeah, so there's a lot of ways I see myself.
I really am kind of loving the fact that you lived overseas. I mean, you didn't live overseas. You were born, I mean, I live in the States, so I would say you were born overseas. But for you, it was your home. So how did you end up moving to the States?
Well, my dad's American and my mom is from England. And so we had ended up in New Zealand for my dad's job, which was it was for the New Zealand Wildlife Service. So he had to focus on saving an endangered species of robin. And so we ended up over there. My mom was 8 months pregnant with me when she arrived in New Zealand. And then she had me. So I was really born there because of my dad's job, not because that's where our family was. So yeah, that's how I ended up there. And then, so we moved, you might say we moved back to the US, although my mom, like I said, is from England and I was born in New Zealand. So I've always kind of felt like a global citizen. I've always felt like I'm observing my own culture that I've mostly spent time in, which is here in the U.S. But also, I feel like I belong to multiple other cultures as well. I mean, I lived a couple of years in England as well, which, I mean, I love England as well. I love New Zealand. I love traveling. I love so many different countries.
You know, New Zealand has been on my bucket list, I have to say, for pretty much forever. It just looks, you've got all kinds of just land masses. You've got the beach, you've got the ocean, you've got mountains, you've got so much. And it just looks so lush and green and so much of it. And it just seems like every person I've met who's from New Zealand is super chill and really cool.
Yeah.
Generalization, but yeah.
Yeah. It is an amazing place. I mean, I'm still in touch with some of my childhood friends from there, and I've gone back and took my own daughter, my husband and daughter, and we all went back, and it was fun for her to get to explore. We drove all over the South Island with her for like 3 weeks and stayed with people. But yeah, so I was living in a little fishing village when I lived there on the South Island.
Oh my gosh. Can I ask you, when you returned, did you visit the Shire?
Yes, actually we did. We did. It was great. Oh, it's amazing. I have these amazing photos from it. And that was, I'm trying to think, it was just after the pandemic when New Zealand had opened back up is when I was there at the Shire.
Again, I'm just getting more and more jealous of you, just to put that out there. you brought up this intuitive, your teaching, being highly intuitive, being a healer. Did you have any sense as a kid that you would step into this, or that you were so attuned to other people and might take this up as a vocation?
Yes. And in part that may have been because I had a near-death experience when I was four in New Zealand, actually. But I always, when I was a child, I remember even growing up when in the US, I was always aware of what was going on with people beyond the kind of surface. So I was always seeing people like we're all kind of like an onion, you know, and you're like peeling the layers of the onion and more is revealed. So, I mean, I think that's what spiritual growth is, or personal growth, however a person talks about it. But when I was a child, I was always seeing people beyond what their veneer was, let's just say. So like, even I remember one time my mom took me to her office party and I was probably about 8 years old, and she introduced me to one of her colleagues, and I just looked at him and I just saw this person who, he had such a veneer on the outside. He had to be professional and he had to be kind of tough, and he had to present himself to the world to survive in a certain way. And he was really a very sensitive and very intuitive person, and incredibly sensitive is what I saw. And I said to him, I said, "You are much different on the outside than you are on the inside." Like, I just said that to him because I didn't know, it was just in my innocence. I didn't know that maybe that would make him feel uncomfortable. I was so excited to say this to him because it was so clear who he was on the inside and how different that was than what, than this sort of slick veneer, you know, kind of very professional, but arm's length veneer. And I wanted him to know, I see you. And of course he wasn't necessarily ready to be seen at that level, but, and I didn't realize that as an 8-year-old, but he was very kind to me. And I actually then knew him for a number of years afterwards, and he was always very kind to me. But in that moment, he was kind of amused or bemused, maybe, because he kind of knew I was on to something. But at the same time, he's like, "I don't know if I want to know what you're saying." And my mom actually thought it was very funny that I had said that, because she actually was able to validate what I was seeing. So after the party, because she thought it was funny that I said that. And of course, I wasn't necessarily trying to be funny. I was trying to give him a healing by saying, "I see you. I see the real you." But she gave me a little bit of his background, which helped me to feel validated that I was seeing really the real him, and the veneer that he had to put around himself to survive in the world. You know, that kind of veneer that we all put out to certain degrees, are all of us, meaning as humans. And so she was able to highlight for me a few things about his life, that so that I could feel like, oh, I didn't just say that for nothing. I really was seeing something. But that was normal for me. So I was just walking around the world seeing people, and that was normal for me. I didn't really realize that there was anything different about it than what anybody else was doing, because of course we're all intuitive. We're all very intuitive. We're all sensitive. It's just how consciously aware we are of it. Are we aware that we're intuitive? Are we aware of what that we can see below the surface? And so, yeah, so that's,
I love that. I just love the image of you and your innocence and your precociousness. And you go to this party and you say this. And I bet you were just walking around your life as a kid before, you know, you put on all the armor and you try to fit yourself in the box that everybody wants you to be in. You were out there, you know, because I just interviewed someone and we talked about how words can heal or words can shift realities. And there you were showing up, shifting people's realities and healing them or helping them to see themselves. And I just really, 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 really think we need more of that in general, especially from kids. Kids are so precocious, but what a gift you were and are, but what a gift as a kid to just feel like you had the freedom. That's the other thing. Your mother took you aside and said, "Hey," you know, she didn't try to shut you down. She said, "Hey, you're totally right on about this. Let's, you know, talk about it." I do want to let you know that I have always been a massive fan since I was a kid of reading like Victorian novels or early novels or stories from, you know, around the time of the American Revolution and what have you. And many of these stories they have, I'm going to pivot now. So I hope you're ready. Many times they have a maple sugaring season. So as a kid, I'd be reading this book and they would talk about the sap flowing or whatever it is, the sugar, whatever. And that, you know, it was, and there was like this finite amount of time, and they were all, you know, they had to be on their toes. They had to be ready. This is like 200 years ago. So, you know, it was very like, they didn't know what the temperature was going to be the next day. You know, nobody had their tech and whatever. All this to say, dear listeners, that I am right now going to be satisfying a very, 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 very old hunger to know more about maple syrup, because another part that you might not know about my beautiful guest is that, can I say that you, I mean, you own a maple syrup company. Is that wrong? Am I saying that wrong?
No, you're not saying it wrong. We have, we produce maple syrup and we sell maple syrup. So yeah, we do have a maple syrup business or little maple syrup company. Yes.
Let me ask you, when you bought the land that you are on with these trees, yeah, was that always the plan?
Yes, actually it was. My husband loves to make maple syrup, and he, when right before we met, he had scouted out the land and bought it. And I was living on the other side of the same town, actually. And so then we ended up moving on to his land, and then we built our house. But and that was kind of an intuitive experience, too, because when my husband and I first met, we were friends. And then I started to have these dreams where I would dream about them and then I would run into them the next day. So anyway, one of those times when I had a dream about them, and then the next day I was at a gas station in another town. We ran into each other and we started talking and we went on a date. Anyway, so, but back to the maple syrup thing. Yeah, he wanted to make maple syrup. And so he did specifically buy the land for that purpose. And then we set up the business slowly over time, just, you know, growing it and growing it over time. We built the house, and then, well, of course, he had already built the sugar house right away. But then we even expanded the sugar house. So everything's just expanded over time. And he's making maple syrup right in this moment as we're talking, listeners.
That's amazing. And okay, so let me ask you, we were talking before we started the official interview about that there has to be a perfect period of weather.
Yeah.
For these. And so, and do you still do it? I kind of always think of the old fashioned way where you tap this little, I don't know, I'm sure it's metal now, but it's like little metal, you know, I don't know, what do you call it? Into the tree?
A little tap.
Yeah, a little tap. And then you put a little bucket.
That is how my mom does it. She has a tiny little operation, and she does have the tap and the bucket and this little adorable miniature operation that my daughter loves to run, that because it's so, you can, it's a one person operation. But we have a bigger operation where we have in the woods, you have to go around and you have to tap one tap per tree, thousands and thousands of trees. And then there's a little tap that just goes in the tree right before sugaring season is going to start, before the sap's going to start flowing, which is only a certain time of year and it's weather dependent. So you go around, you tap each tree, and then the tap is connected to a pipeline, a little plastic pipe that connects to a big pipeline that then goes down the, in our case, down the mountain into these gigantic stainless steel tanks, thousands of gallons of sap pouring in. It's actually beautiful, this beautiful clear sap pouring into the tank. And sometimes I stick a mason jar underneath and just drink the sap. It tastes delicious. It's sweet. It's, of course, it's not as sweet as syrup, because to make the syrup, you have to boil down the sap. So the sap collects, and when the sap runs, you have to be ready to boil, because sometimes the sap is barreling down the mountain into the tanks so rapidly that my husband will have to get up many times throughout the night and check on the tanks and switch over to a different tank. Otherwise, the maple syrup, I mean, the sap is just going to overflow. So it can be crazy like that during the season. There's always sleep deprivation. There's always some kind of chaos. Or if a moose walks through your sugaring lines and knocks things over, or a squirrel or a deer chew on the lines because they like sap. Who doesn't like sap? So there's all kinds of things going on, all kinds of variables. But basically then, yeah, you boil down the sap, and it's like 40 gallons of sap to boil down to a gallon of maple syrup. So that's what he is doing right now. There's tons of steam pouring out of the sugar house. You know, up on the roof, there's where the smoke comes out and where the steam comes out, and he's making syrup, and then it goes into jars for retail and into big barrels, kind of like a wine barrel, like a stainless barrel. Yeah, it's a wild business.
Wow. And just like the complete chaos of a moose walking through everything. I mean, oh, but let me ask you, does it smell like heaven when this process is going on?
Oh, yeah. It really does. If you walk into the sugar house, there's so much steam. It's maple steam. So I always call it like a maple sauna, a maple steam sauna. And it smells really good. You can, you know, I like to get my face kind of up close, but not too close because everything's really hot. And yesterday we had a whole bunch of people over visiting the sugar house, and people were just filling up little jars like that and either drinking it straight out of a little jar or putting it onto vanilla ice cream. You could pour it, the hot syrup, straight onto vanilla ice cream and that's delicious. Or you can pour it onto snow, sugar on snow, as that's a traditional one.
Yes. Yeah. In the books that I read, they were always pouring the on the snow, and then they would eat it after that. So I can't believe you've just fulfilled this childhood dream. I'm so grateful. And I kind of just want to maybe spend some time in a sugar house, partially because of the amazing facial I would get or whole body steam. Second, because if I spend some time in there, I might come out smelling better, which would be amazing. Uh-huh. And third, because it's just called a sugar house. And who doesn't want to spend time in something called a sugar house?
I know. It's a beautiful building too, that my husband built. He built it from nothing. So yeah, you should definitely come to the sugar house. I know you're a ways away from me, but you're absolutely welcome to come to the sugar house. People come all the time to it during the season. You know, neighbors will come up, or family or friends or whoever. So it's it can be fun to just hang out and watch the alchemy happening, the mysterious alchemy of
making. Well, please tell me you have a t-shirt that says I spent time in the sugar house.
I should. I have thought about different t-shirts, like funny ones for maple season. Yeah. That's funny that you said about a t-shirt. I should make some t-shirts.
I will buy those t-shirts. Well, I'm curious, when you were growing up, my second question always is, did you grow up in a religious household? And, you know, if so, what did that look like? And then how has that kind of understanding evolved for you over time?
Yeah, so I didn't grow up in a religious household. I remember going to church a few times with my grandmother. She lived in another state, and she went to the Presbyterian church. So I remember going sometimes with her. And then in my town, there were a lot of people that went to the Catholic church. And my best friend in elementary school, she went to the Catholic church. So I remember going with her to that. But I didn't grow up with a specific religious background. And I think that my parents, well, they are PhD scientists. And I think they found their connection, their sense of awe and wonder probably came through the natural world and maybe their sense of connectivity, being connected, and that probably came through just being really engaged with their community and then being really connected to the awe and wonder of nature. But yeah, that's my...
I was going to ask you, like, what did they both do? I mean, you obviously said that your father was in New Zealand to observe this robin. Was he a biologist, a wildlife biologist?
Well, in New Zealand, he was an ornithologist, technically studying birds, but he was a zoologist, trained as a zoologist. Yeah. So
amazing. I love it when two scientists find each other, you know. It's a good thing. It's a good thing. And actually fall in love. So
that was part of the journey for me, too, was that because I grew up with parents that they were always bringing my awareness to the interconnected nature of everything, how everything on Earth in the physical world is intricately interconnected, you know, the water and the soil and the air and animals and trees. They were always showing that to me. So it was a natural bridge in a way for me to then become more aware of how the unseen world works as well, how we're all so connected on an intuitive level, on a spirit-to-spirit level, on a spiritual level, whatever words you want to use for it. But so for me, it was like I wasn't so much a science person, even though I very much grew up steeped in that world. I was very much an intuitive person that was very interested in humans and healing and our spiritual development or growth. And so, but there was nothing at odds with the way that I had been raised, because I'd been raised to be an observer and to recognize the interconnection. And so even though what I was looking at was a little bit of a different level of interconnection, it's all part of the same thing. There's nothing really about it that's separate. And so that's where I really found my passion was in looking at how much we affect each other as energy and how we really are tuned into each other so much more than we realize, and how there's so much going on that's unseen, and how beneficial it is when we do bring our awareness to being able to see each other on deeper levels. We're just not trained. We're so much just trained on the intellectual end of things. And it's like working out just one muscle, but not working out another muscle. So we just work out our intellects and our learned knowledge, which of course is really important, but there's this whole other aspect of us that brings us so much joy and purpose and connection when we just start to bring our awareness to it and choose to develop it and explore it.
I wanted to just remark on the fact that what is especially powerful for me about this story let's just go back to you having that interaction with that man who was very sensitive, but on the outward looked very professional. Your mother was a scientist. Your father was a scientist. And it sounds like nobody tried to squash this in you, because sometimes when you have, you know, I hate to say this, but scientists sometimes don't believe in things that are unseen. You know this. And so what is really powerful is that your parents did not try to squash that in you.
Yeah. I mean, I grew up with a lot of freedom, I would say, on the whole, like physical freedom to roam. We lived on a farm with hundreds of sheep. And so there was the physical freedom to explore and roam. And then I think they just decided, hey, you know, Gwyneth is not going to go down the same path that we're going down, but she's creative and she's intuitive and she's who she is. So we just want to encourage her with what she loves to do. And I remember when my mom remembers that when I was little, I said to her, I wanted to help people and I wanted to write. And like, I basically told her what I wanted to do, which then of course I forgot. But then years later, she told me that, and that was nice to hear, because of course we all go through a period in our lives where we're trying to figure out, you know, what's my purpose? What is the best path for me? I became a teacher unexpectedly. I didn't expect to start teaching what I teach. So people just asked me to teach them, and I started teaching, and then one class led to another, to another. So I never really knew exactly that I was going to do that. I didn't exactly choose it. I guess it chose me, but it was natural.
I want to just go back to this incident that happened when you were 4 years old.
Oh yeah.
And, whenever people have experiences when they're young, I mean, I think it goes without saying, but I like to ask, was this the event that kind of changed everything for you as far as your understanding of the world? You know, as you grew older and you thought back to the event, did it change everything for you?
Probably it did, because it was so, the outcome was incredibly validating, because basically I remember when I was four, I was walking around seeing people for more than just their body, so to speak. So I was seeing people for seeing their infinite nature. I was seeing what was within them, what their highest capabilities were, or what their sensitivities were, or what the pain was maybe, or the suffering that they were walking around with. So I was walking around looking at the adult world around me, and you might say clear seeing, in a very innocent way. And you know how that is with children. They say amazing things sometimes, and they're just so honest and truthful. When I was four, I remember feeling unseen, not because of something that somebody was doing that was bad, but feeling unseen because I kept being aware that people were just seeing me as a four-year-old. And so that made me feel, this is kind of comical in a way, I felt frustrated. I felt like I was a teenager or an adult. So when people would talk to me like I was four, I had this awareness that I had wisdom or knowledge or light or capability, however you want to say it, that was way more than just what was obvious to the eye on the outside. And so I remember walking around going, gosh, is this all there is to this life? Is the cosmic joke on me? And don't people see who I am? I see who they are. And so I was asking sort of consciously and unconsciously this question that I was kind of putting out to the universe. And I actually got an answer to that same year, because I was walking in the garden and I stepped on a bee. The bee stung me and I went into anaphylactic shock. And which, if the listeners don't know what anaphylactic shock is, it's when your breathing shuts down very rapidly as a result of being stung by a bee or other kinds of allergic reactions. So luckily, my mom and my sister saw what was happening. They grabbed me, threw me in the car, and then my mom was driving as fast as she could to the hospital in this little New Zealand village. And my sister said I was turning blue as my breathing was starting to shut down. So when I got to the hospital, I had this out-of-body experience where I was up in the corner of the room looking down at my mom and my sister and the doctor and nurses and the table. And I was looking down at myself, but I was in a space of just pure awareness where I had this realization, actually, I'm okay. My body's not okay, but I'm okay. And I was in this space where there was no judgment of it. There was no fear in that moment of awareness that's out of time and space. But I had this awareness that I'm really okay. I'm really actually free. And I have this body, and okay, yes, the body's not doing so well, but actually I can breathe. Like it was that kind of realization. And so I had this awareness of being pure awareness, which is hard to put into words. I mean, I'm trying to put it into words, but it's kind of an experience without words. But nonetheless, so you still try to put it into words what that experience is like, but it's like an experience of total freedom and just being infinite or having no bounds. And so I had this awareness, I can stay, I can go. I came back and, you know, my mom and my sister and everyone was very glad that I came back. But in that moment, I realized, wow, okay, what I was experiencing before that near-death experience was true. I am an infinite being having a human experience, or a spirit being, spiritual being having a human experience. And so for me, it was like a celebration that perhaps, and a celebration and an awareness, or it inspired me, you might say, to want to help others to see that they're bigger and brighter and more capable than they might just think, and that there's way more to this life than just what we're told and, you know, what we're given through our training, through our school training and professional training. There's way more going on. And I think it brought me a lot of joy. I remember when I was a kid, I always had a really good sense of humor, and I felt a lot of joy. I think that the experience made me feel joyful, even though I experienced PTSD in my own way as a result of the experience too. So, but after I woke up, or after I came back to my body, and I described the experience to my mom and, you know, to my dad and my sister, after that, in some ways, as a four-year-old, I didn't think the experience was anything very significant, because still there was that part of me going, well, everyone has access to this, really, you know? And I thought that, doesn't everyone have access? Doesn't everyone know that they are infinite? And so it took me a while to realize, well, not everybody knows that, because they've forgotten that. And of course, I should say, it absolutely doesn't take a near-death experience to be able to experience being, to say hello to that bigger, brighter part of yourself. That really is an experiential process that can happen anytime, anywhere. It's really just someone's willingness to do it, or to become aware, or to decide that they want to have that experience of recognizing themselves on a deeper level, seeing their light.
It's good news that we don't all have to have an NDE too.
Exactly.
Yes. Well, let me ask you, did you ever tell your parents about this experience?
Yes. I mean, I definitely told them about the experience, and it's interesting because my mom also had a near-death experience as well when she was a child. So she could relate to that experience as well. But a lot of my life, I would say, I didn't think much about that experience or talk much about that experience, I would say. And when I started to you know, teach and get more into the spiritual work. That's when I circled back to that experience, realizing that it had value to share, that sharing it could actually help people in some way, or it could have some meaning for people. So, because a lot of my life, I think I, you know, when you're a teenager and when you're in your 20s, you tend to sort of shelf a lot of those experiences and you circle back to them later on.
That's it. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Gwyneth and learning a little bit more about the maple sugaring process, but also learning a little bit more about Gwyneth and how cool she is. Of course, there will be a link to her website as well as a link to her book, which is coming out on May 27th. It's called Limitless: Transform Your Life with Intuition and Creativity. And I'm not going to lie, I really do think that we all need to develop our intuition, our ways of knowing about the world, our ways of incorporating the world and taking it in. We all could use a little practice honing that skill. So I think that this book will both be a joyful addition as well as an educational addition to your library. I really enjoyed meeting Gwyneth, and I'm hoping that we stay in each other's orbits for quite a long time. Hint, I will be showing up during maple sugaring season at some time in the future. Now, to all of you who listen to this podcast, you know I'm always, always pleading for ratings and reviews. So if you're listening and you haven't yet done so, please go to the platform of your choice and write a little review if you can. If not, just give me a rating. My heart will absolutely thank you. Thank you for listening. And here's my one request. Be like Gwyneth. You know, yes, Gwyneth had these extraordinary capabilities as a kid, but she didn't shut them down. And believe me, I have known lots of people who have talked to me, and after our conversation, they've admitted that strange things happened to them when they were children, and they absolutely shut them down. I mean, when you're a kid, these things are overwhelming and so mysterious and strange, and then you have adults around you telling you that you're imagining it. Well, I think the response to shut down is totally normal. But Gwyneth was in a great position because her parents supported her. And so she's been able to develop and hone her craft, develop and hone her intuition. And as a consequence, now she's able to bring her gifts to the world and to you and I so that we can develop our own skill set around these things. So be like Gwyneth, and when you have something strange happen or something extraordinary, just understand that maybe you've been given a glimpse of the mystery behind the universe, the mystery behind reality, and that maybe, just maybe, you should run with that. Well, and I think it's important that people know this stuff and that they hear these stories, because then they can understand there are things that are possible that most of us don't even understand yet. So yeah. I'd love for you to talk about your book a little bit, and what was the genesis and how did you think about it, begin it, and now it's out in the world. So very soon.
Yes. So it'll be released on May 27th, which really is suddenly coming up. And so the book, I've always loved writing. And I started out when I was a child, I used to write poetry and you know, win some poetry contests and things like that. And then I was writing when I was in my 20s, I was writing some fiction and I was writing some humor and different things like that. And then once I had been teaching for, I've been teaching for like 18 years or so now. But so a couple of years ago, when I started to write this book, I knew I wanted to dive back into writing, and I felt like the most beneficial thing was to write a book that might help people, because I've always felt like I'm in service. I love to help people. And so the book was based on all the years of teaching, and I've taught a lot of mental health professionals and nurses and doctors and school teachers and heads of school and writers and artists, people like that. And a lot of those people would come to me wanting to develop their intuition as a way to heal their lives, as a way to tap into their own answers, that kind of thing. And what I noticed was everybody would usually have the same stumbling blocks with expanding their intuitive abilities. And so that's what made me, that's what inspired the book. And I put a lot of stories into the book and then a lot of practical exercises too. But basically I kept asking for intuitive guidance. I kept just saying, what book should I write that would most help people? If I'm going to write a book, it needs to be something that helps people. And what aspect of being intuitive, what aspect of healing ourselves, and what aspect of expanding our creativity on the biggest levels of creativity. When I say creativity, you know what I mean, right? You know, what would be most useful, because there's so many directions you could go with a book like that. So really, it was based on what I saw would be most useful based on where people get stuck when they're developing their intuition, or where they stumble, or where they start to not be able to trust. Is this really my intuition? And how do I know this is my intuition? And, oh, wait a second, I'm not sure if I'm being intuitive or not. And how do I expand this? And so that's the question in the book that I dove in with. And I wanted to make it really simple and really accessible. I wanted to just put it in language that could be readily understood and make it just really relatable. And that was my goal with the book. So lots of my own stories, lots of student stories, and then lots of just very as clear as I could, explanations for exactly what's going on behind the scenes with when we go to be intuitive or explore that part of ourselves. And hopefully the book, I also wanted it to be fun to read and not heavy, because the best healing happens when we're laughing or smiling or, you know, having fun, feeling enthusiastic versus being really serious, then everything vibrationally kind of drops down.
By the way, congratulations on starting something and finishing it, because many people do not.
It's hard.
These things. It is so hard.
And it brings up so much. Writing a book brings up a lot of fear.
Oh, I'm sure. Now, please tell me that when someone buys your book, they also get a tiny jar of maple syrup.
That would be so great. It's so funny that you're saying that, because I thought about that. I thought, well, maybe when I do the book launch, I'll bring jars of maple syrup, and, you know, the first 50 people that come to buy a book, something at the book launch, get a little pint of maple syrup.
Why not? I mean, it would be a really sweet thing to do. You see what I did there?
Yeah, it would be really sweet.